evening, everyone. This is Lou Caverly from the Divided Kingdom. Well, we'll start out tonight with something that could affect any one of us. If you go to the bank, watch out. This is from Fox News, June 20th, 2025, by Peter Dabrowska and Steve Harrigan. Police sound alarm on dangerous jugging robbery trend sweeping across America. Law enforcement warns the crime can be over in seconds as criminals work in teams to target unsuspecting victims. Texas police warn of a new crime trend called jugging. Fox News' Steve Harrigan reports on the soon-to-be felony known as jugging as the robbery tactic spreads across Texas, Georgia, and South Carolina, as surveillance footage of an increasingly popular violent street crime has surfaced from South Carolina, police are warning Americans of the disturbing trend. The crime is known as jugging, a type of robbery in which criminals surveil banks and ATMs, watching for victims who withdraw large sums of money. When those victims finish their transactions, the juggers will usually follow them to a secondary location where they will rob the victims, often inside their vehicles. And here's a quote. Jugging rhymes with mugging. It's spread across from Texas to South Carolina. Fox News senior correspondent Steve Harrigan said on America Reports on Friday. He went on to say some police there weren't even sure that what the word meant until the crime started happening in their own districts. Law enforcement warns that it could be over in a flash. And here's a subheadline: Bronx car owner dragged in street during carjacking caught on camera. In the footage, captured on April 26th, a man can be seen struggling inside the front passenger area of a red truck before jumping out of that vehicle and into a silver SUV. The SUV then speeds off, and it is captured from different surveillance angles fleeing the parking lot. Corporal Cecilio Reyes of the Malden, South Carolina Police Department explained how the crime typically plays out. Reyes said, they are scoping, and they will watch you as you're either coming in or going out of the bank, or watch you do ATM withdrawals, seeing how much you're getting cash-wise. Harrigan described a wave of jugging arrests in Texas before the practice began spreading to North and South Carolina. He said, quote, in one place in South Carolina, a landscaping business owner went in a bank unaware that he was being observed, took out his weekly payroll, stopped at a gas station for a soda, and two juggers, they usually work in teams, pulled up alongside his Chevy, broke through the window, and made off with what his entire payroll was, namely $6,000. Harrigan also reported that the Texas legislature is working to make jugging a specific felony with harsher penalties than simple robbery. So, beware. I don't know this spread to other states yet. This, after all, was published pretty recently, June 20th, but it probably will be, knowing how such things go. All right, now we're going to move on to a LifeSite news article. That, by the way, was from Fox News, June 20th. And again, the name of that crime is jugging, to rhyme with mugging. Now, from LifeSite news, Canada's top doctor who puts COVID jabs and masks resigns from her position. The subheadline, Dr. Theresa Tam, Canada's chief public health officer, is resigning after a controversial tenure that included promoting experimental vaccines and mandates. This is by Claire Marie Murkowski, Wednesday, June 18, 2025. Canada's top medical advisor, known for her promotion of masking and COVID vaccines, is stepping down as chief public health officer. Dr. Theresa Tam will resign on June 20th from her role as Canada's Chief Public Health Officer, CPHO, ending her eight-year tenure during which she forced Canadians to follow dangerous COVID regulations, including masking and taking the experimental COVID shots. Tam told the Globe and Mail, "I've been in this role for over 8 years now, so I think it has been an absolute privilege and honor. I never thought at the start of my career that I would end up here. Looking back, I put every ounce of my energy into this job, but I think it's a purposeful job. It's serving the public," she continued. Tam's replacement has not been named. In the early months of 2020, Tam became well known by Canadians for leading the country's response to the COVID pandemic, and they have that word pandemic in quotes, and pushing arbitrary and dangerous regulations. Initially, Tam assured Canadians that masking was unnecessary, ineffective, and could even pose health threats. However, shortly after, Tam changed her policy, telling Canadians that they should even wear masks during sex. Lightside News has published overwhelming evidence that masks are not effective in preventing the spread of COVID and can cause myriad health issues. Additionally, Tam promoted experimental COVID vaccines for Canadians as young as 6 months old, despite having no long-term studies on its effects. LifeSite News has published an extensive amount of research on the dangers of the experimental COVID mRNA jabs that include heart damage and blood clots. The mRNA shots have also been linked to a multitude of negative, often severe side effects in children, and all have connections to cell lines derived from aborted babies. In 2022, after thousands of Canadians reported adverse effects from the vaccine, Tam announced that the federal government was reviewing all federal COVID vaccine mandates, claiming that Canada's public health agency has never outright endorsed mandatory vaccination. However, Tam's remarks come after more than 1,000 federal workers have been suspended without pay because they chose not to get the COVID jabs or disclose whether they had them as per the Privacy Act. Starting November 15th, 2021, most federal employers, I think that should be employees, by the way, but I'm not positive, were mandated to disclose their COVID jab status. Those without the jabs were not allowed to work and were placed on leave, with a total of 1,084 employees and 27 in the health department being suspended as a result. Additionally, the federal government mandated that Canadians traveling by air, rail, or sea, both domestically and internationally, have the experimental COVID jabs, or they would be barred from those means of travel. However, Canadians may never know the true extent of Tam's rule implementing COVID regulations. She recently signed a secret oath. I think that means secrecy oath, preventing her from divulging information relating to the COVID crisis to not embarrass the federal government at the time. And again, that's the federal Canadian government. In total, 29 managers signed the oath with the public health agency and departments of foreign affairs, health, industry, and national defense. Recently, Canada has walked back several of its COVID-era policies, as growing evidence reveals the ineffectiveness and dangers of Canada's health regulations. In January, a federal judge ruled that complaints that maskless workplaces pose a danger to employees' health are frivolous, ending the final chapter of COVID regulations. Additionally, this month, Alberta announced an end to provincially funded COVID shots, meaning that those who wish to receive the vaccine must pay for it themselves. Well, as most of you know, my late wife, Elizabeth, and I wrote a book, A couple of years back about this whole matter of the COVID so-called pandemic, the so-called panic, the so-called vaccines, which were not vaccines in the commonly used sense of the word up to that point, because they didn't prevent the illness. Vaccines were supposed to prevent an illness. If you got the smallpox vaccine, you weren't supposed to get smallpox. As a kid, I got that. I got the polio vaccine, and I never got polio. But, and it's a very big but, since these mRNA vaccines proved to be largely ineffective at preventing the disease, I know many, many people who got this so-called vaccine who got COVID anyway. So what did they do? In a true Orwellian, what shall we say, move, I guess, they changed the definition. So if you can't say it's a vaccine, you simply change what a vaccine is. That's what they did. So most of the publications that are trustworthy put the word vaccine in quotation marks, meaning, nah, it's not really a vaccine. We just want to call it a vaccine. If you'd like a copy of the book that Elizabeth and I wrote, that is a good historical record of much of this whole matter, it's free. I have some copies left. I'll be happy to send you one. If you can send a little bit of money, maybe $5, to cover the cost of the mailing, I'll be happy to get it right out to you. Just write to me. Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, and the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Once again, Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28. Excuse me, got a frog in the throat. And the town is Bethlehem, just like in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And just say, dear Lou, please send us your book, and I'll get it right out in the mail as soon as possible. Well, now, that, again, was LifeSight News, I believe. Let me check that. Yes, LifeSight News, Wednesday, June 18th. Canada's top doctor who pushed COVID jabs and masks resigns from her position. Well, now another thing from LifeSight News and a whole different topic. Very good article. I may not read all of this, but it's well worth reading. And this appeared Wednesday, June 18th. Again, a pretty recent article this past week. The headline says, Trump's Religious Liberty Commission targets anti-Christian bias, government tyranny. And the subheadline, 10 members of the newly established White House Commission held a public hearing for the first time to address domestic threats to Americans' freedom. And I can't show you the pictures over the air, but if you go to their website, you can see them. One of the captions on the top picture says, Attorney General Pam Bondi speaks during the first hearing of U.S. President Donald Trump's Religious Liberty Commission on the, quote, importance of faith to American success, unquote, at the Museum of the Bible, June 16, 2025, in Washington, D.C. This, again, was by Doug Mainwaring, LifeSight News, June 18th. The newly established White House Religious Liberty Commission held its first public hearing this week, launching its mission to help guide President Donald Trump to secure domestic religious liberty at a time when it has long been under violent attack. Noted Kelly Shackelford, president and CEO of First Liberty Institute, quote, our founders called religious liberty our first freedom because they understood that if you lose this freedom, you will lose all of your freedoms. He added, the one thing a totalitarian regime will never allow are citizens who hold an allegiance to one higher than the government. And TV talk show host Dr. Phil McGraw said, we are in a cultural war, and not one among us can afford to be a non-combatant as we fight for the soul and sanity of these United States. He also warned if the ideologues are able to pull the rug out from under religious liberty, everything else comes tumbling down. And Paul White, senior advisor to the White House Office of Faith, the first such office ever established by a president, asked the question, who would have ever thought President Trump would have to pardon 23 pro-lifers for standing outside an abortion clinic and praying silently, or that the FBI would spy on our traditional Catholic Church, or that a coach who would kneel on the side of a football field would have to fight all the way up to the Supreme Court to silently pray. She concluded, we have a lot of work to do. Perhaps the most salient testimony of the day, at least for those without law degrees, came from Kristen Wagner, CEO, President, and General Counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom, the ADF. Under her leadership, first as head of U.S. litigation, and now as CEO, ADF played a role in nearly 80 U.S. Supreme Court victories and won 15 of its own cases before the court, including serving as legal counsel with Mississippi in the landmark Dobbs ruling overturning Roe versus Wade. Wagner began, today's tyrants don't wear crowns. They aren't kings. But they do often sit on our school boards, on our civil rights commissions, and on our city councils. And they're openly hostile to freedom and unmoored from objective truth. They censor, they fine, they even threaten jail time to Americans who dare to hold different beliefs than they do, especially if those beliefs have anything to do with the dignity of life, God's design for marriage, or the simple truth of what it means to be a woman, she said. She went on, truth is the first casualty of tyranny. But the real cost? It is always human. Wagner described the heartbreaking human cost due to heavy-handed government action to people who have had their constitutional right to religious liberty trampled. In the interest of time, I'm going to script down just a little bit. Well, no, I think I'll continue on for a while. Imagine being so inspired, and these are in the words of Miss Wagner. Imagine being so inspired by your faith that you dare to open a homeless shelter and give your life to it, only to have the state tell you that you either abandon that faith or cease serving those in need, or fostering children for years at a time, and you're the health department's first choice to place newborns that are addicted to drugs, until you say that, quote, boys are not girls, unquote, and the department then revokes your license. Or, what if you escaped 20 years of sex trafficking and faced an unexpected pregnancy, only to be later targeted by your own state attorney general for helping other women in similar situations? Or, you're ministering to widows and orphans, only to have your bank account shut down and be denied access to capital because of your faith. Or during COVID, your daughter chooses to wear a Jesus Loves Me mask to school, but school officials force her to remove it, even though they allow students wearing other messages in school. Or perhaps you've served your country in uniform, risking your life to defend freedom, only to have officials deny you a public grant that is available to all other students, but not to you, because your desire to become a military chaplain, that should be because of your desire to become a military chaplain and pursue that degree, that's simply too religious. All your home state calls your faith a, quote, despicable piece of rhetoric, unquote, and then compares your timeless beliefs about marriage to perpetrators of the Holocaust. These stories are not from nations that are ruled by authoritarian regimes, she said. Each of these, every single one of them, has happened in real time on our own soil. No nation can survive, nor can its people flourish, if its officials believe that they can regulate the soul and excise beliefs that are held sacred by all the Abrahamic faiths, Reagan had declared. So we must ensure that the United States remains the refuge for religious freedom. And it's why we gather today, because political and cultural winds should not shift. This is not a Republican or Democrat issue. It is a moral and cultural imperative. And skipping down, Wagner offered these recommendations. First, restore the conscience and religious freedom division at Health and Human Services, and support the Conscience Protection Act, and support the Families Rights and Responsibilities Acts. Second, end the financial targeting of people of faith and ensure the IRS doesn't discriminate against houses of worship or religious organizations. Guarantee the prior weaponization of financial regulations. Guarantee that prior weaponization of financial regulations and markets against people of faith never, ever happens again. Support the Safeguarding Charity Act that protects the independence and tax-exempt status of charitable organizations. Third, protect people of faith from the regulatory state. Develop rules that prevent future administrations from labeling as domestic terrorists Americans who simply purchased a religious text or spoke at a school board meeting, and require religious training for FBI agents. Fourth, promote religious freedom on the international stage in collaboration with the Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. Implement President Trump's 2020 Executive Order on Advancing International Religious Freedom to ensure that religious freedom remains a central priority of U.S. foreign policy. And finally, our president's most lasting legacy, as we have heard so much indirectly about today, is the men and women that he appoints to the judiciary. President Trump must continue to do more than appoint originalists to the bench, but to appoint judges with an established record of courage, character, and conviction who will apply the law without fear of public opinion. And Wagner said, religious freedom built America, and it has sustained it through war, through depression, through dangerous division. In fact, our faith-filled elites founded the nation. They abolished slavery. They ended segregation. And even today, they continue to champion women and families and the most vulnerable. It is that same faith expressed freely and lived boldly that will lead America to renewed greatness. Well, there's some other good things here, but in the interest of time, we'll have to cut it off there. The 10 commission members present were Chairman Dan Patrick, former governor of Texas, Vice Chair Dr. Ben Carson, Ryan Anderson, Bishop Robert Barron, Carrie Brigine Bola, Allison Ho, Kelly Shackelford, Pastor Paul White, and Rabbi Maya Soloveitchik, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, Eric Metaxas, and Franklin Graham were unable to attend. All right, so again, that was from LifeSite News. June 18th, Trump Religious Liberty Commission targets anti-Christian bias and government tyranny. All right, now let's switch over to a couple of things about medical matters, but not COVID this time. This one's from the Washington Times. FDA halts Biden-era program of sending Americans' DNA to China for genetic engineering. Yes, you heard that right. FDA halts Biden-era program sending Americans' DNA to China, etc. And this, again, is from the Washington Times by Bill Gertz, Friday, June 20th. The Trump administration is halting companies from conducting clinical trials in China using Americans' DNA samples in a program authorized by the Biden administration, according to the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. The FDA said an immediate review has begun on new clinical trials that involve sending living cells of U.S. citizens to China and other hostile states for, quote, genetic engineering and subsequent infusion back into U.S. patients, sometimes without their knowledge or consent, unquote. The agency moved to halt the program based on what it said is mounting evidence that some of the trials were conducted without informing people involved that their biological material was being transferred and manipulated. The activity may have exposed Americans' sensitive genetic data to misuse by foreign governments, including adversaries, the FDA said in a statement Wednesday. FDA Commissioner Marty McCarry said the unacknowledged transfer of DNA samples has raised questions about the integrity of U.S. biomedical research. Dr. McCarry said, quote, we are taking action to protect patients, restore public trust, and safeguard U.S. biomedical leadership. The previous administration turned a blind eye and allowed American DNA to be sent abroad, often without the knowledge or understanding of trial participants. Unquote. The FDA said the suspect transfer of Americans' biomedical samples was the result of a December 2024 policy by the Biden administration that was put in place by the Justice Department in April. And I'm going to insert there, this is Lou speaking, in my own words, did Joe Biden really know about this? After all we're hearing about Biden's incompetence and they're using, what do they call that, an auto pen to sign all these executive orders? We do have to wonder when we hear things like this, did Joe Biden even know what he was doing? Was he even the one doing it? Did some of the underlings take the responsibility on themselves and never tell the old man what they were doing in his name? I strongly suspect that that could have been the truth. Well, now moving on, the Biden rule and imposed export controls that limited the transfer of sensitive data to countries of concern. But the Biden administration specifically approved a, quote, sweeping exemption, unquote, that allowed U.S. companies to send trial participants' biological samples, including DNA, for processing overseas in FDA-regulated clinical trials. This exemption applied even in cases involving companies partially owned or controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, the FDA said. Now, jumping down a little bit, the review of the DNA transfers to China is being taken under two executive orders, one from the Biden administration and a more recent order signed by President Trump last month. The Trump order restricts, quote, dangerous gain-of-function research on biological agents and pathogens that has the potential to significantly endanger the lives of American citizens. If left unrestricted, its effects can include widespread mortality, an impaired public health system, disrupted American livelihoods, and diminished economic and national security. The order states, the Biden administration, and this is again a quote from the order, the Biden administration allowed dangerous gain-of-function research within the United States with insufficient levels of oversight, the order noted. It also actively approved to the National Institutes of Health federal life science research funding in China and other countries where there is limited United States oversight, a reasonable expectation of biosafety enforcement. Well, we've heard, and this is Lou speaking now, we've read a lot about this gain-of-function research that apparently Dr. Fauci was quite aware of, and there are strong suspicions that that might very well have led to the COVID pandemic. Of course, China said from the beginning, it's the bats. The bats that did it. But as time has gone on, that scenario seems more and more unlikely. and a leak from the Wuhan lab, much more probable. But now going on, I'm going to skip down a little bit. Robert G. Darling, a medical doctor and expert on biological weapons, formerly with the Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick in Frederick, Maryland, said the transfer of Americans' biological data to China raises major concerns. China's medical establishment has few moral or ethical guidelines and research, and has used prisoners and dissidents for such practices as organ harvesting, he said. The transfer of sensitive biomedical data on Americans could also be used in China's reported effort to secretly develop designer, that's in quotes, designer biological weapons capable of targeting ethnic groups, Dr. Darling said. China could use genetically engineered DNA samples inserted back into Americans for testing biological weapons. Supplying such DNA to China is, quote, truly one of the nightmarish scenarios, Dr. Darling said. And again, I'm going to skip down a little bit in the interest of time. The State Department's most recent annual report on arms compliance with treaties said Chinese military medical institutions in 2024, quote, conducted toxin and biotechnology research and development with potential biological weapons applications, unquote, that raised concerns about violations of the Biological Weapons Convention banning germ, virus, and toxin arms. Recent Chinese military writings suggest the People's Liberation Army is engaged in research on biological weapons capable of targeting specific ethnic groups. The authoritative PLA textbook, Science of Military Strategy, includes a section identifying biology as a domain for military struggle. The book states that the potential for new types of biological warfare will include, quote, specific ethnic genetic attacks, unquote, designed to affect targeted ethnic groups. And skipping down a bit more, China's Wuhan Institute of Virology, the suspected origin of the COVID-19 pandemic, has been engaged in secret PLA biological weapons research, according to State Department intelligence. China has denied any biological arms programs, but has refused to cooperate with the international investigators in seeking the origin of the pandemic. Once again, very interesting article that will team up with an article I'm about to read that brings it closer to home. But this one was from the Washington Times on Friday, June 20th, 2025. FDA halts Biden-era program of sending Americans' DNA to China for genetic engineering. Well, could it happen? It seems like it's a strong possibility. Here's an article that appeared in the dailymail.co.uk on June 4th. The headline reads, Chinese couple were part of years-long ploy to smuggle biological pathogens into the U.S. And it's a little faint, that's why I'm kind of hesitating here and reading it. Eden once snuck dangerous material in shoe. This is by Brittany Chain for the DailyMail.com. A Chinese researcher accused of plotting with her boyfriend to smuggle a weapon of agroterrorism into the United States may have successfully hidden pathogens in her shoe on a previous trip. University of Michigan postdoctoral fellow Young Queen Juan, and I probably massacring the name, but it's Yunqing Jian, age 33. She's been charged alongside Zhang Yong Lu, 34, for the sinister plot allegedly tied to the Chinese Communist Party. Liu arrived in the United States from China in July 2024, carrying four small baggies of fusarium, graminearum, Again, I apologize for massacring the Latin words here. Fusarium graminearum, a product responsible for causing billions, that's with a B, billions of dollars worth of damage to livestock, wheat, barley, maize, and rice globally each year. FBI boss Cash Patel issued a chilling warning after the first pictures emerged of Jian, I guess that's how you say it, J-I-A-N, on Tuesday evening. He said, this case is a sobering reminder that the CCP, that is the Chinese Communist Party, is working around the clock to deploy operatives and researchers to infiltrate America's institutions and target our food supply. Again, those are the words of FBI boss Cash Patel. If successful, the ploy would have grave consequences. This is a quote. Would have grave consequences, putting American lives and our economy at serious risk. The duo have been charged with conspiracy, smuggling, making false statements, and visa fraud. In a horrifying twist, the criminal complaint reveals that Jian may have been successful in smuggling pathogens into the United States earlier. And my copy stops at that point. But if you go to the internet, there may be more to read. And again, that was dated June 4th of 2025 in the website dailymail.co.uk, June 4th, and the short form of the title, Chinese Couple were part of year-long ploy. And again, you may be able to get a little bit more information if you go to that website. Now, something else in the Washington Times. Trump administration funds $10 million study on health effects of East Palestine train derailment. Well, you probably remember that a couple years back. There was a train derailment. My memory is all kinds of chemicals were spilled, and with the authorities' permission, they set it on fire, which may have made matters even worse by spreading all kinds of toxins in the nearby area. And it gives a little detail. One of the captions for a picture says, this photo taken with a drone shows portions of a Norfolk and Southern freight train that derailed Friday night in East Palestine, Ohio, and was still on fire at midday Saturday, February 4th, 2023. So this article from the Washington Times is by Kerry Pickett, dated June 20th of this year. The Trump administration has launched a study of the long-term health consequences for residents of East Palestine, Ohio, from a train derailment that spilled toxic chemicals in 2023. The initiative, spearheaded by Vice President J.D. Vance, comes after he was brushed off by Biden administration officials when he urged a study on any detrimental environmental and health effects on the East Palestine community. Mr. Vance was a U.S. senator representing Ohio at the time. Under President Trump, Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Director of the National Institutes of Health, Jay Bhattacharya, have launched a five-year, $10 million research initiative to investigate the disaster's long-term health impacts. And let me interject here. I think anybody who reads this, the first thing you would say to yourself is, why has it taken the better part of 2 years? Actually, more than 2 years, because this derailment and the chemical spills happened in February of 2023. Here it is, June 2025, almost 2.5 years later. Why the delay? Well, as it says, apparently the Biden administration did little or nothing about this, at least according to this article. And let me see now, picking up the article again. These are the words of J.D. Vance. I've been to East Palestine a number of times, and they're very worried about What are the long-term impacts of these chemicals in the water, the air, and what effect does it have on their kids and grandkids after 5 years, 10 years, 15 years of exposure? Mr. Vance said those words during an announcement of the initiative while flanked by Mr. Kennedy and Dr. Bhattacharya. And he also said, I tried as a United States senator to work with the Biden administration, and they refused to do anything to actually study the effects of these long-term exposures on the people of East Palestine. Those are the words, again, of Vice President Vance. Mr. Kennedy called the effort, quote, the first large-scale, coordinated, multi-year federal study focused specifically on the long-term health impacts of the East Palestine disaster. The program will support robust, community-engaged epidemiological research to understand the impacts of exposures on short- and long-term injuries, Mr. Kennedy said. And according to Mr. Kennedy, the program will also, quote, support public health tracking and surveillance of the community's health conditions to help us make informed health care choices and take appropriate preventive measures. Dr. Bhattacharya said the program will be community-led, will emphasize extensive, well-coordinated communications among researchers, study participants, community stakeholders, healthcare providers, and others, unquote. This includes, he said, community engagement that focuses on hazardous materials like vinyl chloride and benzene. The NIH is scheduled to start research in the fall with a proposal deadline of July 21st. On February 3rd, 2023, the Norfolk and Southern freight derailed in the community. The train wreck involved 38 cars and carrying hazardous chemicals, which ignited and spread in prolonged fires. Now, let me interject there. I may be wrong, and some of you may remember, or we can look it up if necessary. I think that the fires were set on purpose to burn off the chemicals. And I'm not quite sure of all the facts, but it seems to me that setting of the fires may have worsened the situation and caused the chemicals to spread all the more. You know how when you have a fire, the flames and the smoke carry all the chemicals over a widespread area. I believe that's what happened here, but I'll have to do some research on that to be sure. Reading on with the article, East Palestine community members immediately began experiencing a range of health symptoms, including headaches, respiratory problems, and skin and eye irritations, prompting concerns about the broader long-term impacts on maternal and child health. In April 2024, Norfolk Southern paid out $600 million to settle a class action lawsuit filed on behalf of East Palestine residents. Last month, communications revealed through a Freedom of Information Act request allegedly showed that Biden administration officials knew about the dangerous health risks presented by the toxic spill, but continued to tell the public there was no evidence of significant chemical contamination. Lies. That's my word. Lies. Well, on a little happier note, here's something from Fox News by Andrea Margolis. Published June 20th, Captain Cook's legendary ship finally identified near New England Resort after 250 years. And the resort being spoken of is Newport, Rhode Island. Again, this was published on June 20th. The preceding one, by the way, I should mention, was the Washington Times. And it was published on June 20th as well. Maritime experts believe they finally pinpointed the exact resting place of Captain James Cook's legendary ship, just off the coast of a beloved New England resort town. A report about HMS Endeavour was published by the Australian National Maritime Museum on June 3rd. In 1778, the British intentionally sank the ship off the coast of Newport, Rhode Island, in a strategic move to block French and American attacks. That would have been, of course, during the American Revolution. While it has long been known that the 18th century vessel lies off the coast of the Ocean State, its exact location has eluded maritime historians. But now experts assure that the Rhode Island State Archaeological Site, named RI-2394, is the final resting place of the ship. And they have decades of research to back it up. Well, some very interesting things here. I won't read it all because it's a lot of it is rather technical about some of the things they found. For example, they found four cannons at the site. They found a linear stone ballast file that fit the dimensions of the ship. The site also features remnants of floors. Futtocks. Now that's a new word to me. F-U-T-T-O-C-K-S. And a stanchion, which is a post that supported the ship's deck beams. So they think they've actually found it. Now, Captain Cook was, he may have been the first man. I didn't have time to look this up. I must look it up on the internet or encyclopedia. I believe Captain Cook may have been the first Englishman to go around the world. He was a very famous explorer. So that's a neat little article. And why did the Australian National Maritime Museum single this out for special attention? Well, it says, the endeavor holds great significance in Australian history as the first European vessel to reach the country's eastern coast. So, very historic in that respect. But after the ship sailed around the world, it was sold to a private citizen in February 1775 and renamed Lord Sandwich before it was scuttled. And marine archaeologists across the world are actively discovering countless numbers of shipwrecks per year. Just last week, officials announced that they had discovered a 16th century shipwreck at record depth in French waters, also off the coast of Ireland. Underwater archaeologists recently found an 18th century vessel believed to be a long-lost treasure ship. That will be interesting, too. If you want all the details, that's in foxnews.com, June 20th, 2025. Captain Cook's legendary ship finally identified near New England Resort after 250 meters. Oh, here we have a couple of interesting headlines. Money-wise, worse than the 2008 financial crisis, Germany becomes a nation of bankruptcy with no end in sight. This was from Infowars.com, June 4th, and just reading a couple of quick headlines, Germany is bracing for a continued surge in major insolvencies throughout 2025 and even 2026, according to a recent analysis by credit insurer Allianz Trade. This all comes after a disastrous 2024, which saw a record-breaking number of bankruptcies in the country. And again, that's worse than the 2008 financial crisis concerning Germany. June 4th, Infowars.com. And in a similar article, Japan's government, out of money, out of options. This was June 4th in KingWorldNews.com. KingWorldNews.com. Japan is in serious trouble, and it looks like there is no easy way out of the difficult challenges they face. The worst-case scenario would be a currency collapse. Japan's government, out of money, out of options. Gerald Salente. With a national debt more than twice the size of its economy, Japan is faced with rethinking its decades-long practice of using public money to affect social policy and keep the economy afloat. For a quarter century, borrowing and spending was easy. In 1999, the Bank of Japan dropped its key interest rate on loans to zero to rescue the economy after the yen's value soared, then crashed. The rate stayed at or close to zero through the Great Recession. When the economy failed to rebound in January 2016, the bank dropped its rate to -0.1. And once again, if you want more detail, go to King World, kingworldnews.com for June 4th. Well, one of our intrepid researchers up in Massachusetts has sent me a whole bunch of great stuff, from the Boston Herald, some from the New York Post, and I just have so many I can't possibly do them all. Governor Healey is bashing President Trump for what she calls an outrageous deployment of the National Guard to Los Angeles. Never mind the fact, and this is me, Lou speaking, never mind the fact that the city is being torn by riots, that the Los Angeles mayor and the governor of California didn't seem to be able to control. They didn't want the president to get any credit for stepping in. Then we have that judge you probably have heard about, Judge Shelley Joseph, who is said to have let an illegal immigrant evade federal authorities, and she's been charged with a crime. She says, I didn't do it, as you might expect. Well, that is the subject of quite a few headlines, especially in the general neighborhood of June 13th. There's one entitled, How Did That Happen? One was June 13th, and the Boston Herald. How did that happen? Judge Shelley Joseph denies any wrongdoing. Some other ones, I'll just read you some of the headlines. We have an article by Douglas Murray. Kelly's gruesome Newsom twosome. It's talking about Governor Gavin Newsom and the mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass. Just read you a couple of paragraphs here. Again, this is by Douglas Murray. This also appeared in, no, I take that back. This appeared in the New York Post on Friday, June 11th. And it says, it is only 5 months since California last burned down. That happened while Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass was away on a foreign jaunt, and Governor Gavin Newsom took the brilliant opportunity to have himself photographed as the state burned. You'd have thought that the complete destruction of the Palisades, that would be the Pacific Palisades, and the loss of billions of dollars of property, and the most destructive wildfire in L.A. history, would have focused the minds. Perhaps someone would have even have taken responsibility for the water hydrants that had no water. But no, 5 months later, both the mayor and governor are still in place. And now their state is burning once again. This time the cause is even more man-made. If you're a politician seeking to avoid blame, you can always blame wildfires. It's simply an act of God. Lament the problem and move on. But when the fires are as man-made as these latest ones and encouraged, well, that's different. And of course, they are talking there about the riots against ICE. They don't like people being forced to obey the law, do they? And a little caption that shows a burned-out car and a little obscenity about ICE. Pathetic failures is the caption. With their open border leftist policies, California Governor Gavin Newsom and Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass gave illegal immigrant rioters free rein to run amok in response to federal action. Oh, what else do we have here? But you see now, yeah, Governor Healey has been very upset that the laws are being enforced. And then we have an article from the New York Post, Tuesday, June 10th, that said, City of Angels and Demons. And that talks about the deployment of the National Guard to Los Angeles to try and quell the rioting. A lot of people don't like obeying the laws, do they? And then we have lots more on the L.A. situation, more on the judge who is alleged to have helped a criminal evade the ICE, and a couple more quick ones, lose to pull a stunt, the latest Dem tactic. Well, that's the mayor of Boston, Michelle Wu. She says, let's see, the mayor is demanding ICE release info while her administration ignores public records requests. Typical double standard. Then we have left-wing nonprofits distribute anti-ICE in Los Angeles. This is from the New York Post, Wednesday, June 11th. Left-wing nonprofit groups are helping to fuel anti-ICE riots here by handing out F-blank-blank-K ICE packs with protective equipment as protesters continue to take over downtown every night and engage in rolling battles with cops, federal agents, and National Guard troops. And they show California Representative Maxine Waters on Tuesday was among the Democrats claiming that the L.A. protests were peaceful, despite evidence to the contrary. And it shows a picture of burning automobiles. Doesn't sound too peaceful to me. And what else do we have here? Jail the flag. Trump blasts L.A. vandals on Post Scribe's new podcast. All right. And again, we have all kinds of things here. Slam the door. This, I think, was the Boston Herald. Afghan refugee office was a corrupt failure. After 3 years and more than $5 billion, the State Department is finally closing down a program that ushered thousands of poorly vetted Afghans into the United States from a nation known to harbor deadly terrorist operatives. Well, our music is on. Our time is up for this week. Go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. Write to me, Luke Averly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. We've had a little drop-off in contributions to keep the program running. We could use a little help. If you can write us a little check or money order, or even a little bit of cash, stamps, we will be most gratefully received. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in again next week. Good night.